No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to us and affect the lives of everyone. Today we have a very special guest. We have Lisa Rice. Lisa is a political strategist, and she's working on Initiative 83 here in D.C., and this is on the ballot, and we want to discuss it and find out what it's all about. Lisa, I met you briefly at a parade, and I'm not really a ranked choice voter fan, but I got to be honest, I'm really not sure exactly how it works. So I want you to explain it to me, and maybe I'll change my mind. And first, let me just say I read your bio, which is amazing, and I noticed that your son is a D.C. public school teacher. So shout out to him.
Yes, that's
a really tough job. I come from a family of educators. My wife used to be in charge of all the D.C. public school libraries and is now a librarian in a high school in Annandale. But yeah, we love teachers. It's the most important work, and it's really tough. And they ought to make five. They ought to make what lawyers make, and lawyers ought to make what they make. So that's my personal opinion. So let's talk. Let's start there, Lisa. Thanks so much for being on the show. Explain ranked choice voting to me, please. How it works.
Sure. And that's not the entirety of the initiative, so I hope
no,
you can
I understand.
Step back and talk about that. But ranked choice voting is a proven system which requires that candidates earn over 50% of the votes to win. That's it.
Okay, so now I vote for Charlie, and Charlie doesn't get 50% of the votes. So then do we move to Ralph, who's in the second position and gets the most second votes from everybody?
The person who gets the least amount of first choice votes is eliminated.
And then what happens?
And if that's the person that you voted for, then whomever you ranked second gets your vote in the next round.
Okay, but there's no...
It's like an instant runoff.
But there's, like, no need to have another election. We can work this
correct.
All out.
Huh? Correct. It's correct.
Okay.
It's what ranked choice voting does for you from the operational, the nuts and bolts perspective. It's an instant runoff. So it brings together, and I'm using my hands, and we're on radio. We're on a podcast.
Well, that's okay. I'm Italian. I can relate. Go ahead.
But, yeah, so it's an instant runoff. Think of it as an instant runoff. So you, as the voter, from the voter perspective, you've got a multi-candidate race with the flavor of ranked choice voting that we're proposing. You would be able to choose your favorite and rank up to four backups. So you're in total ranking five should you choose. You don't have to rank. You don't have to rank five, but you're choosing your favorite and ranking four backup.
Okay, so now Joe, I'm still having a hard time with this, but Joe has 49% of the vote. Can he win? Or does
not until he gets over
50. Is he automatically eliminated and we move to the second
No, he's
person?
Not eliminated. No,
okay.
No. The person who's getting the most votes is not eliminated. It's the person who's getting the least.
Okay, and then... How does he win? He gets enough of the second votes to put him over 50?
Right, but they were at one point someone's first choice for another candidate. And whoever that was that got the least amount of votes. So, and I can't, you know, I can't draw the, I wish I had a board, but
yeah, no, you did keep too.
You keep referring to the person that's at the head, but what it's really about is whomever gets the least amount of first choice votes, then they are eliminated, right? But whomever voted for them in the first place, whoever they said was their second choice, then that person, those votes are reassigned as first choice votes. So if Joe, your friend Joe that you're talking about,
yeah,
if in that next round enough people had him as their second choice, they become, those votes become first choice. If that gets him over 50%, then he wins.
Oh, I see. So you don't always see, because my problem with it is, was I was figuring you always ended up with the second place person. You know, the first place person couldn't win. Once he didn't reach the threshold of 50%, then you automatically move on to somebody else.
No.
But he could still win, because if he gets the most second place votes,
there you go,
then he wins.
There you go.
Okay. And how does this make our system stronger? I really don't understand.
So what it does something for the voters, and it also does something, I believe, for candidates. For voters, it is giving folks the assurance that the person who has moved into office is doing so with support of most of the votes, right? So 50%, you know, which is more than half, 50% plus one. So you feel as a voter, yeah, maybe that person wasn't my first choice, but they were my second, and I'm okay with that. As a candidate, you are going into office with more than 50% of the vote. And we know, Senator, that in D.C., in these multi-candidate races, that is not happening. And so what we have is people who are winning their races and going on to the council, having won 20, 23%, 28%, 30, whatever, of a race that only 20%, if we're lucky, of people voted in. They're not going in with majority support, no matter how you slice it. And well, that's why it's important.
Well, and here's a problem I see with that. In the at-large race, which I think is the race you're referring to, I mean,
let's go to Ward 7.
Let's go to Ward 7.
We don't have to imagine. It's a beautiful example that occurred right here in my ward, my home ward, Ward 7, in the primary. Before the primary, there were 20-plus candidates, winnowed down to 10. So on primary day, there were 10 full-fledged candidates on the ballot. It was a scenario in which we knew going into that day that the person who won the most votes probably wouldn't even get 25% of the vote. And we were right. That person won with 23% of the vote. Mm-hmm. There's something wrong with that, because that person doesn't have majority support. 23% voted for that person. That means that 76% voted for someone else. And they didn't have a chance to make that person their second choice. So that is a person that's going into office not with nothing close to a mandate and nothing close to a majority of voters casting a ballot for them.
Well, I would just tell you, I don't know the voters that you know that would be satisfied with the second choice, because I've never met them. I mean, voters generally are not satisfied with anybody but their candidate. So I'm a little skeptical of that. But I would also say that he was the winner. It's a contest, and he was the winner. And he's the first choice of the people, whether he's the choice of the majority of the people or not. And let me just say about the at-large race, no one's ever gotten 50% that I remember in the at-large race. So what do you do there? And you have a lot of candidates. You got to keep on going down the list. Some candidates win. I remember the other Michael Brown won with like 12% of the vote, 15% of the vote, something like that. That's off the top of my head. But you know, that's really problematic, I think. And the thing that gets me most is that 82,000 people in 2020 did not vote for the second seat because they don't understand how you can vote for two seats.
I think that is not a good assumption to make, that people don't choose to use that second vote because they don't understand. I think plenty of people understand, and I think they only want to vote for one candidate.
Why would you do that if there's two seats available?
Because maybe you don't like anyone other than one person, or maybe you don't want anyone else to get a vote and you want to send a strong signal. People have very strategic reasons for voting for one candidate. And so I think to assume that it's based on confusion or ignorance is not fair. I talk to people all the time, Senator, who are very strategic about how they vote. And we also know in this supermajority Democratic town, folks vote for a Democrat and they don't feel like voting for anyone else, and that's their decision as well. You asked me to talk about how it works in at-large races, and so let me share with you. We decided to pick the simplest way of calculating votes. For the voter, it's the same as always. You vote your favorite and rank your backup. If your first choice loses, your vote automatically moves to your second choice. For the Board of Elections in the at-large race, losing candidates are removed until there are only two left and both become council members. And so that's how it would work there. But I want to go back to something you said, Senator, about nobody wants their second choice. I would disagree with that. I would say that there are people, many people, who live in places where there is ranked choice voting. And here's what happens with candidates and their behavior. When they are campaigning in a ranked choice voting scenario, they are campaigning more on policy, less on politics, more for what the people want, less on party. And so what they do is form coalitions with others. What they do is talk to people about what they think makes them unique policy-wise to get into office. And what they do is ask people for their vote, and they say, and if you don't want to give me your first choice vote, I would love it if you rank me second. And that is what we see in places where ranked choice voting is the law of the land. So the way that people campaign changes. So it's not the same. It's just not the same atmosphere for campaigning unless you're a stubborn person and don't want to. And I would point to, you know, Sarah Palin, and she did not want to campaign in a ranked choice atmosphere. And, you know, in that primary up in Alaska, and, you know, she actually came around when it came time from the general and said, rank the red. So, you know, even she changed her mind.
Let me first say that you brought up Alaska. I train Native Americans to run for public office, so nothing could make me happier than seeing that woman be Sarah Palin. That was a very important thing to me, and I'm all for it. But let me also say, when we get back to the ignorance thing, that I ran for city council at large with no money in a race with 13 candidates, and I came in third. I spent maybe 5% of what all the other candidates spent. If I'd come in a little better, I would have won because the top two people went, and I was third out of 13. And the way we did it was we sent people out to the polls, poll workers, and they all wore T-shirts and handed out literature that said, make your second vote count. Make your second vote count. We knew the Democrat was going to win the election. I changed to be an independent for that election, which a lot of people do. And we knew the Democrat was going to win. So we pushed people to vote for me in the second vote. Vote for me in the second vote. And you know what? I did really, really well. Because a lot of people don't understand how it works. They don't understand how you can vote for two people for the same office. And I think that's one of my biggest problems with ranked choice voting is it's complicated to choose up to five candidates for the same office for people. And we've seen, you know, you talk about Alaska, and that's great, but we've seen that it's been banned in Alabama, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi,
preemptively.
Oklahoma, South Dakota, Idaho, Montana.
In places Tennessee. Where it doesn't even take place, Senator, they are preemptively banning something that isn't even taking place, which is the same move that some, you know, folks wanted to do here, ban something that hasn't even become the law of the land.
Right, I get it. And look, I don't agree with you on this, which is fine. You know, disagreements fine. I don't agree with you on it, but I signed a petition for Adam Heidegger because I believe in what you just said. I believe that the voters should decide on this. I shouldn't decide whether it's right or wrong. So I don't have any problem at all with it being on the ballot. It's just not an idea that appeals to me because I think it's very, very difficult in D.C. And when you bring up the Board of Elections,
I didn't bring up the Board of Elections.
Well, you said, you know, said something about the Board of Elections, and
I did not.
Okay,
nope.
I'm sorry, but let me bring up the Board of Elections then. The Board of Elections in Washington is not a good Board of Elections. We have a lot of problems with the Board of Elections in Washington. So it seems to me that making the process more complicated for them is just not going to be a formula for success, that's all. And let's also point out that there are states that have used, after the first election in Alaska, for example, they had three times as many bad ballots. Ballots that, you know, like I said, 82,000 ballots that didn't count because they were either undervoted or overvoted, and that's three times one as normal. And is it more expensive to do this? Are there expenses involved? I hate to sound like a Republican
voting?
On that.
For ranked choice voting? No. It's open source software, and I'm not going to indulge in bashing the Board of Elections and saying our Board of Elections
is bad. Oh, you don't have to do that.
What I will say, in places that we see that ranked choice voting is implemented, that folks are doing well with it, we see that boards of elections or administrators or whatever are able to implement it with ease. What is incumbent upon the Board of Elections, those who are supporting this change, on us as people who are promoting this, is to get out all the education that we can.
That's about important education.
People can be taught things. And because someone doesn't know something today doesn't mean that they can't be taught tomorrow. And so...
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. And I think that would be a very important component that you would have to get out there and, you know, educate people. And let me put this disclaimer in. I'm telling you my opinion, not based on my experience of any sort. So I really don't know how ranked choice voting would work in D.C. I'm just speculating on what I know. So, it wouldn't be the first time I was wrong politically. But when it comes back to the policy thing, where people talk about policies instead of other issues because they want the second vote, politicians say whatever they want. You know, Donald Trump loves women. I don't know if you're hearing this, but he loves women. He's going to protect y'all. He's going to do really great things for you. Come on. Is there any woman in America that actually believes that? Unfortunately, there are a few. But we say whatever we think, and very often, whatever we think the electric wants to hear. We don't, you know, we're not, and the issues really are party agendas. They're more party agendas than they are individual agendas, right? The Democratic Party stands for the right of a woman to choose. Now, Democratic candidates in general stand for that. The party has an important position, so let's move on to that, because there's another thing that's been tied on to this initiative, 83, which I think has been conflated, and that is to allow independents to vote in either primary, which they can do now, by the way, but I think that was... Why did you put that on there?
So I'll answer that question, but as a registered independent, I will tell you that I am barred from voting in primary elections.
All you have to do is change your registration, which you can do online, and then change back the next day.
Why should I change my registration? Why is it incumbent upon an independent to change their registration to be able to vote in a taxpayer-funded election? If the Democrats did what the Republicans just did this cycle and paid for their own primary, you know, held their convention in a private spot, I would have absolutely no logical reason to say I should participate in that. We taxpayers are paying for the Democratic primary. We should all be able to vote in them.
Well, you can't look. You're right.
You keep saying that I can, but I cannot maintain my status, my registration. If I were to vote in a Democratic primary, I would have to change my registration to Democrat. That is what we're trying to change right now. We're trying to let taxpayers be able to participate in these taxpayer-funded elections. If we say that, and what we've been told by the opposition, well, you can vote in the general, that is very disingenuous, because we all know that the primary is what sends most of people into office, and in fact, most candidates stop campaigning after they win the primary.
You know what?
Doesn't even have a campaign manager anymore.
Look, you're very kind, because most candidates do not stop. All candidates stop, because I'll be the first to say it. If you win the Democratic primary in Washington D.C., you've won the election. The Washington Post calls you up and asks you what you're going to do. They don't even wait till the general election. I go out and give donuts out on general election day. The Democratic Party has a lock on the District of Columbia. There's no doubt about that. Okay, and to win the Democratic primary means that you will be elected. I can't remember the last time someone won the Democratic primary and didn't win the general election. So I get that. That's absolutely the truth. But I still don't understand, I guess, why, if you want to, you know, if it's important to you to vote, these are just party IDs. You don't have to drink the Kool-Aid. And I think a lot of people make that mistake. To be a Democrat is nothing more than a label. In Washington, D.C., we were prohibited from having all Democrats. That's you know, it's against the law. So what do? Our Democrats become independents. You know, the son of the chairman of the Democratic Party becomes an independent and runs for that seat that's not allowed to have a majority party person in it. We just change. We all change our party affiliation. I cannot remember a politician in the District of Columbia who ran for those offices as independents who were not actually Democrats. And that's, you know, and that's the point that I'm trying to make here. This is a label. It doesn't say anything about you any more than it's a mechanism for you to be involved in the political system. That's all. And you can change it at any time. And I think, I got to tell you personally, because I've been in politics a long time, I think you put this together, I think you put the two issues together because you're really smart. And the people that are doing this are really smart. And they understand that most people believe that everybody should get the vote for everything, right? I believe that. And so I don't think there's anybody in Washington, D.C., I don't think there are many people in Washington, D.C. that would tell you that independents shouldn't be able to vote in a primary. They should be able to vote.
Oh, boy, there are lots of people, Senator. There are lots of people that tell me that to my face every day.
They do.
They absolutely do.
Look, I'm a Democrat. I believe blue. But I don't believe that. You know, I don't for a moment believe that independents shouldn't vote. And I've had many people on the campaign trail come to me and complain about what you're talking about, that Democrats have locked on everything and you're independents and they should be able to vote.
I'm not saying that you are one of those people.
What I'm saying to you is that
the opposition, this is one of their talking points. Independents should not be able to vote.
Why would you bar an independent from voting?
Ask them. I would love for you to come to one of the debates and hear.
Yeah, I'd love to do it too. Especially, in the District of Columbia where we're fighting to have a voice in our federal government. We should not close anybody out of the system, and I agree with that. But
I hear what you're saying, and God bless you. You're saying it's your opinion that, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just a label. Doesn't matter. Well, if it doesn't matter, then why do people want to stop me as an independent from voting in that election? Why, if the label doesn't matter, then why keep me out? In fact, the label matters a lot, and it matters a lot to people, especially, Senator, who are young people. I have been on college campuses over the last year, Georgetown. I've talked with students from GW. I've been on the Howard campus, I think, three different times. The young folks, they are not happy with the major parties, and they are registering as independents more so than anything else. And so what we're going to see as a country in these places where independents are barred from voting in primary elections, we're going to see folks that are between the age of 18 and 29 this is going to become a bigger and bigger issue. It's going to become a bigger and bigger issue. And, you know, I respectfully disagree. The label does matter. I understand in D.C. politics, for a lot of people, they treat the label as, you know, nothing, it doesn't matter. But, in fact, it does matter. And if it didn't matter, then the Democratic Party could invite independents tomorrow to vote in the primary.
But
they haven't done that.
Yeah, and the only problem with that
it'd still be a partisan primary. They could invite us tomorrow and say, "Independent, yep, you can have a ballot and go to the next Democratic primary."
Well,
that's how easy.
You know, you'd have my vote for that. I mean, you would have my vote for that, right? But the primary is supposed to be for the party to put forth a candidate. So I think, you know, I see a few minor problems with that, but overall, I believe you're right. I believe that independents should have their voice heard. It's just that ranked choice voting for me is, and that issue is, are being conflated, I think. I think they're two separate issues. I think
they
deal with two separate things. They're not both about and they shouldn't be in the both, they, in my opinion, shouldn't both be in the same initiative. There should be two initiatives. You know, so that people can decide on either issue. And for people that don't want, that are telling us that the problem is that you can't separate the party from the vote. I think that it's disingenuous to put this issue in with ranked choice voting because you can't separate those two issues. You don't have a choice to say, you know what, where's ranked choice voting in this? You don't have a choice to say, hey, you know what, I like the idea of because this is how I would vote. I like the idea of independents being able to vote in either primary, but I don't like the idea of ranked choice voting. I think it's too complicated, and I think it's too confusing. And I think that I understand why young people look. I have kids. They're all grown. They're all adults. And my daughters say to me when I was pushing Joe Biden, who's somebody I've worked for in the past and I loved, even though I think he made the very right decision in doing what he did. But early on, they said to me, both of them said to me, Dad, we don't need to elect another fat old white guy. And as I stood there and looked at them, after raising them and paying for the college education, I said, thanks a lot for that. But I understand their sentiment. They want a voice, and they feel like they're being closed out by the parties, and I get it, because that's the purpose of the political parties, right? Is to coalesce and push their own agenda. Now, the only other thing I would say about that is that coalition governments do not work. They don't work. We've seen them all over the world fall apart. The Italians let everybody in the country run the country for 2 weeks between the Second World War and the 1970s. And every one of their coalition governments fell apart. We've seen it in Germany. We've seen it in England. We don't need a coalition government.
We're not asking for a coalition government.
Well, that's what. But how are you going to get people as independents? The only thing that you're doing in with the party thing is that you're getting people to coalesce around the issues. Okay, and that's what coalition governments do. They don't coalesce around a party or an institution as much as they coalesce around an issue. So
Senator, when we talk about independence, that part of the initiative is to simply allow me and the other 75,000 people who are registered as, I think it officially we're NPA, no party affiliation.
Right.
That is simply to give us the right to vote in Democratic primaries. We're going to be just like everyone else. We're going to make our own individual choices about who we vote for. We can't do a thing about the candidates that are put forward. The Democratic Party is going to do whatever they want in putting forward candidates. I mean, it's me. It's your neighbor. It's one out of six Washingtonian registered voters, one out of six registered voters who want, we want to be able to exercise that vote in taxpayer-funded primaries. If this is so important to the Democratic Party that, we not be able to exercise this right, then, they could pay for it themselves, and then it wouldn't be a taxpayer-funded primary, and then I wouldn't have anything to say about it, right? But as long as it's taxpayer-funded, I'm going to fight for it.
Well, I doubt that the ranked choice voting people would go away if the Democrats paid for their own primary. I think they would still want a voice, but the issue really isn't how much it costs to taxpayers. The issue is being shut out of the process. So I don't think that paying for it would necessarily negate that feeling that they're still shut out. And the Democrats would pay for it. I mean, they don't have to.
They're not.
No, of course they're not. But that's because we have a two-party system in America. And,
doesn't have anything to do with the two-party system. It has to do with the fact that the Democratic Party has been able to get the district government to pay for their primaries.
Well, the Republicans don't pay for their own primaries. They don't pay for their own primary in D.C. They don't pay for their own primary anywhere else.
This cycle, they just paid for their own primary.
Who did? The Republicans?
Yes, they did.
Well, that's news to me.
Yep.
How did they pay for it?
No, maybe they had a fundraiser, sold donuts or something.
I mean, I don't know, but you know, look, none of this surprises me. When I worked for the Democratic National Committee for several years. It just came from the Democratic Convention in Chicago, and you know, the government pays for them as well. Pays for the Democratic Convention. Pays for the Republican Convention. Now, I don't know that they pay completely for it, but they give them each an allocation, you know, $20 million. And then if it costs more than that, I guess the party picks up the difference. But, yeah, I understand why that would piss taxpayers off. But I really don't, you know, I don't think that would change people's attitudes about ranked choice voting. I think ranked choice voting is about getting younger candidates in, progressive candidates in, not something that I'm crazy about in D.C. because we've had problems with progressive ideas in the District of Columbia. But I understand it, and I'm not against it. You know, it's how we move forward, right? I agree with my daughters on that issue. We don't need a bunch of old white guys telling everybody else what to do. Okay,
well,
you know, we need a better mixture, and we need young people. We need young voices. You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is somebody that I don't often agree with, but I love her and I support her because I think she's an important voice. You have to have an important voice. And one of the reasons I had you on the show is because I think I looked at your bio. I think you're an important voice too. I mean, obviously, you have a great education. You're an amazing speaker, and you should be heard, whether we agree with you or not, because that's how we make democracy work.
Thank you.
We feed it by voting, and we make it work by listening, at least hearing what each other has to say. And
yeah,
and it really is my biggest fear as I'm about to retire in January. I'm 71 years old. I have three young adult children, and I worry about all of them and the direction the country's going because we're so divided more than anything else. My daughters worry about issues that you can imagine young people worry about, things like a woman's right to choose, and you know. But the thing that concerns me most is that this crazy guy that we have running for, I mean, he's off the rails, and 50% of us support him. And my biggest gripe about the Democrats is that Democrats don't take responsibility for him. You know, I mean, we need to take some responsibility, right? Because if we were doing our job, 50% of America would not be standing up there supporting Donald Trump. So, and let me just ask you, how about that ranked choice? What if we had a presidential election that was ranked choice? And I vote for Kamala Harris first, and then I vote for Kennedy second, because he's the only other Democrat that I see out there, and I'm a Democrat, even though he's an independent these days. There's a guy. That's a perfect example. He changes party affiliation, right? And does anybody really think that he's, you know, he comes from the Kennedy family and he's not basically a Democrat? So I vote for the two of them. Kamala, and it looks like she may not get 50% of the vote. What happens in that case? Do we then move on to Kennedy?
Nope. Again, it's about however many people are in that race. And this is a hypothetical that makes zero sense because it's not a multi, you know, it's such a loopy hypothetical. But with ranked choice voting, again, I'm going to say you're the person who gets the least amount of votes, then if you are one of the people that voted for the person that got the least amount of votes, then the person you put in second, your vote gets reallocated to that person, and then whoever comes up with 50%. But that is a loopy loopy.
No, and look,
I want to go back to something.
Yeah, go ahead. And I'm only saying that because I'm trying to simplify it for myself more than anybody else, you know.
I want to go back to something that you said about ideology and ranked choice voting and progressive and this about ranked choice voting and then specifically about the district. So what everyone knows about me is that I'm a centrist independent. So we have a coalition of people of ideologies that are supporting this initiative, not because we see that a person who thinks exactly like me has to be the one that's in office and I'm going to use ranked choice voting to do that. No, what we want is someone in office, people who control an amazing amount of money on that budget, on the council. We want the people who get into office to be put in there by 50% or more of us. That is what we want. That is what we want. And there are people of various ideologies who support that, Senator. So, I'm a centrist, and I'm an independent, of course, because I'm, you know, one out of six of your neighbors. We want a government that works for most of us, that is accountable to us. We want these politicians to work harder for us. And by we, I mean centrists like me. I mean, we have many people in this coalition who are moderate, and we have many people in this coalition who are slightly conservative. We have many people in this coalition who are liberal. We have many people in this coalition who are progressive. Wide range of ideologies, all of whom have one thing in common. We want the people who are on that council representing, working for, and accountable to the majority of people, 50%. We want them to get in there with 50% of the vote. We just do not accept that 23% of a sliver of the vote should get you into office. That's what it's about.
Well, I understand that motivation. It makes all the sense to me. I mean, I don't see the centrists. I see the money coming from groups that I would consider very, very liberal. Not that I'm saying anything bad about that. Some of them are friends of mine, but Dr. Bronner's is not a centrist group. There are people that are pushing the envelope, and we should push the envelope. I'm not against it, but and just let me say that if you move to the second choice, and he or she combined with the votes they got, you know, because you've eliminated the lower people, get elected, then my choice for office didn't get elected. My second choice for office got elected. And
isn't that better than not liking them at all, not having any kind of support behind them at all? Today it's all or nothing, and so few people are making the all choice. That's what I'm saying in Ward 7. Only 23% wanted that first choice. 75, 76, 77% wanted someone else. And they didn't have a chance to say, you know, if not this person, then I'd be okay with that person. And, Senator, that day, on primary day, I went to several polling stations and saw people. I actually was out in Ward 8 at the very beginning of the day, but by about 9 o'clock, 9:30, I spent the rest of my day in Ward 7 rotating. And, folks were really, really experiencing, I don't know how to describe it, but they were torn. They were literally torn. We had good candidates. Out of those 10, there were some really solid candidates, and people were wringing their hands saying, I really like this person. I really like this person, too. So people who didn't have a system in front of them, they didn't have a ranked choice system in front of them, at least when I was hearing what people were saying, they certainly had a feeling that there were two or three or four folks that, wow, you know, these are pretty good. And so I think that people, when they are faced with a pool of candidates, can really pretty quickly, if they're faced with 10, they can pretty quickly peel off the, who they would, you know, be their top three or four. And I would say, because I talked to a lot of voters on primary day, and that was what I was hearing, was, you know, this is hard. This is hard to choose between these people. I like this one and that one and that one. I just don't know what to do. And candidates, I spoke to several candidates that day, and I did speak to one candidate, and I will not mention who they are, but I spoke to one candidate, you know, at 10 in the morning, who didn't even want to talk to me, Senator, about the initiative. Didn't want, don't want to hear what you have to say, and actually was quite negative. By 6:30 that evening, that candidate said to me, you know, if we have ranked choice voting, there are a lot of people that would have put me second. And I said, there, you got it. You got it.
Yeah, well, you know, right? Combat makes us all believe in God, right? When we lose, yeah, we all, but the only thing I would say about that, I agree with you. And if this thing has any choice, any chance of success, I would give a lot of that credit for that to people like you. I mean, you're an incredible spokesman, and I so much appreciate you coming to talk to me today because I know how busy you are. But I would tell you that flies, what you just said, flies in the face of conventional wisdom. If that were true, the soundbite wouldn't work. And that's what works. What works is 10 seconds of your attention, not any deep thought about the issues. You've got 50% of America supporting Donald Trump, and when you hear these people and you say, well, why are you supporting him? Well, I like how he is on the issues. Well, how is he on the issues? Well, I don't really know how he is on the issues, but he makes, you know, but he refers to Arnold Palmer's anatomy, and I like that. You know, I mean, the reasons that people vote in large are, as my grandmother would say, as deep as a saucer of milk. You know, they really don't dig that deep. But thank God, there are people, unfortunately, so we have to go, but I'm going to give you a minute to say anything you want to say that you haven't said. But thank God we have people like Lisa Rice who are out there fighting the good fight. And people, I would encourage my voters to look carefully at Initiative 83. It's not something I like, but maybe it's something you like. And please, Lisa, if there's something I haven't asked you or something you want to say, please say it.
Well, first and foremost, thank you so much for inviting me onto the show. And I've had a delightful time. You're hilarious.
Good.
I love it. Thank you so much. Second of all, what I want to say, and I mean this from my heart, this is a passion project for me. I am in it because I love democracy, and I believe that we need to be participative in our democracy, and I believe that we need to have policies that put voters first, and these are the electoral reforms that I see put voters first in a great way and can do so much for our city. This is my hometown. I was born and raised here. My son was born and raised here. I love this town, and I am so dedicated to this. I'm so excited. You know, we've talked to over 100,000 people just to get those 40,000 signatures. We've talked to tens of thousands more since we got on the ballot. People are really excited about change and reform. And so then my last thing I'll leave you with is for all the voters out there, flip your ballot. It's on the back, and vote yes on 83.
Well, let me say that I don't doubt a word of what you just said. I know your heart is in this. My only regret is that I didn't meet you 20 years ago because I'd be mayor by now. So you're an amazing campaigner. Thanks so much. We close out every show where we dedicate a song to the person that was on the show. And I picked a song for you today, which was a hit probably 10 years before you were born. So here's one from the Loving Spoonful. Loving Spoonful, Have You Ever Had to Make Up Your Mind? And thank you so much, Lisa Rice, for being on the show. Folks, tune in next week.
Did you ever have to make up your mind and pick up on one and leave the other behind? It's not often easy and not often kind. Did you ever have to make up your mind? Did you ever have to finally decide and say yes to one and let the other one ride? There's so many changes.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.